This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the AIPIS show for accredited income property investment specialists and those who aspire to be. If you're a real estate, mortgage, or financial professional, this is the place for you. We'll explore innovative investment analysis, sales, marketing, and income-generating strategies for the most historically proven wealth creator, income property. Learn from the experts as they show you how to build a better business and a better life.
Welcome to the AIPIS show for accredited income property investment specialist and those who desire to be. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we talk about increasing your income, your productivity, and just generally having a better life while serving your clients better with America's most historically proven asset class, income property. We have a great interview for you today, and we will be back with that in less than 60 seconds. Hey, it's my pleasure to welcome Mark Kohler back to the show. Most of you know his name. He's spoken at many of our events, and he's been on the show before. He's a CPA and an attorney, author of three books. I love the title of his first book. It's called Lawyers Are Liars. And he's got a new book out as well, and so we're going to talk to him about that today. Mark, welcome. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for having me again, Jason. You have such a quality show. It's an honor.
It's good to have you back. So tell us about your new book.
Well, it is titled, maybe it was just in time for the NBA playoffs, I'm not sure, but it was titled The Tax and Legal Playbook with kind of a clipboard image on the front. And it's 28 game-changing strategies for tax and asset protection, estate planning, bringing the whole thing together.
And Mark, that is your third book. So why did you write this one? What is the thesis of it? Was it sort of putting together the last two?
Yes and no. And that's a great question. Thanks. The first book, of course, Lawyers Are Liars. No offense to any of you lawyers listening to the show today. This is, it was really about the scams that are out there and people that call lawyers liars. And it was my first book because I was really worried about how many people get taken advantage of. And I still do so many conversations of people scammed with crazy asset protection. My second book was more of a story. It was a story format that brought tax planning alive. And I know many of you out there, the last thing you want to read is a story or, I mean, sorry, a book about taxes, right?
So, well, you know, if you suffer from insomnia,
that's right. Or you've got a big tax bill, you might force yourself to do it. But it was a fun story type book that taught it in that type of format, which is really easy for some people to digest. But my new book brings it in a lot of ways, Jason, a lot of it together. Some asset protection updates from my first book and then the tax strategies that are – and each chapter can be read independently or that can be read from front to back. And these 28 strategies just help bring the big picture together with little stories and anecdotes and case studies and diagrams. And so many, many people have already said that they've really enjoyed this other type of format. Always trying to find a new way to make tax and legal sexy. You know, it's hard.
Yeah, well, it's hard until you need it. When you need it, it becomes really, we'll say sexy, if that's the word. Well, you've got some good tips for people. Share some of those with us.
Well, you bet. Kind of my approach with the organization of the book and when I consult with clients is a three-legged approach, a three-legged stool, if you will, where you've got, you know, we all know this. We got to look at our tax planning. Then we need to coordinate it somehow with our legal or asset protection or business planning. And then finally, like many people do, they procrastinate or don't even consider the estate planning. You know, what ultimately owns everything that I've got, and is it all coordinated? So I'd like to today to maybe throw out three tips, one from each area of that, and try to bring it all together in a format that someone from the show will benefit.
That'd be fantastic. You know, that's a nice kind of overview. And if we have time, maybe we can add a couple of bonus things. But what are your three?
You bet. And I know you, Jason, you're so smart. You will probably zoom in on a couple of those. Well, let's hit the tax one first. And for many out there that are even seasoned real estate investors, this would be a good review. But for you out there, maybe dipping your toe into the pond, if you will, of real estate, this is so important. One of the basic and most important tax strategies when it comes to real estate and my investors and professionals around the country is understanding the difference between ordinary income and passive income. And a lot of people think, oh, I'll just set up my LLC and start doing business. But LLCs don't save taxes. They're flexible. They provide great protection, different types of asset protection based on the state, actually. But from a tax perspective, an LLC gets you nowhere. And so self-employment tax for the real estate professional or the investor doing a lot of fix and flips and rehabs, that's one of the first most important tips is to let's tackle the self-employment tax issue. Make sure that you're not paying paying on self-employment income, and you organize your structure properly for that ordinary income.
Okay, so explain what that means in terms of passive and ordinary and all of that stuff. Just, you know, for the listeners that know, it's a nice review, but for other listeners who may not know, just go over that a little bit.
You bet. And I'll give a technical point here that some out there may really appreciate some new case law on this. For the basically what this means is ordinary income is like commissions, sale of a product, sale of a service, the 1099, the infamous 1099 that you might receive. And for real estate investors, it also includes those fix and flips. If you're going to do real estate, hold real estate less than 12 months and do the rehab and flip a property, pretty soon the IRS says, hey, you must be in the business of doing that type of real estate. And so it becomes and it morphs into this ordinary income.
Which is a bad thing. See, that what the IRS wants you to do is provide housing to people long term. So that's what they incentivize. And that's why, even though I've flipped many properties in my life, I'm by and large not a flipper at all. I'm the buy and holder, you know? So yeah, okay.
Yeah. And some of you even listening may have a small business already, or you're a consultant, a professional, and you're also doing real estate. And so you may already be paying more self-employment tax than you should. Now, the passive side, we'll come back to the solution to that. It's not the end of the world. But on the other side is the passive income. And of course, that's rent, royalties, dividends. Maybe you're holding notes. It's interest. It's points. It's letting your assets work for you is passive income. Pretty straightforward. But self-employment tax doesn't apply to passive income, only ordinary.
And how much is self-employment tax?
Well, it's important. It's 15.3%. So if you did three or four flips or had some ordinary income on commissions or services you provide, you make $100,000 net, that's a $15,000 tax bill before you even get to state and federal. So it adds up quick. And then, Jason, you have Obamacare that kicks in on top of that once you get over $200,000, $250,000 of income. So it really can add up quick.
Tell us how much the Obamacare adds. I mean, I just can't believe what a disaster that's ultimately going to be. And one of the things I talk about on the show a lot is the concept in life and economics of you can't hear the dogs that don't bark. So let me just share an example with our listeners. One of our clients who's probably listening to this, he's a Venture Alliance member, great guy, you know, married, couple of kids. He owns a couple of franchise businesses, and he's right now at about, I think, 45 or 48 employees. And he has the capital, the ability, and the desire to expand the business, but doesn't want to do it because once you get over 50, a whole new set of Obamacare-related requirements phase in. And so this is the problem, folks. For those of you who think, oh, well, free healthcare sounds like a great idea, or cheap healthcare, or government-sponsored healthcare, or whatever permutation of this socialism you want, right? You can't hear the dogs that don't bark, because there are businesses out there that would expand that don't because of these types of regulations. So how much does Obamacare cost?
Well, there's two types of we pay for Obamacare with several methods that the government's implemented. But for us, the taxpayer, what will hit on your tax bill are one of three costs. First is the healthcare penalty. If you don't get insurance, you're going to be contributing through a penalty assessed on your tax return. And some of you this year may have already felt it assessed through your 2014 tax return. The second is the 0.09% tax on self-employment income, again, kicking in at $200,000 or $250,000. And this really hurts the big W-2 wage earners. And I know some of you are on the phone, on the show today here listening about this and topic. And and probably already feeling the pain on your pay stub, seeing that extra Obamacare tax. But for self-employed individuals, I'm going to give you a solution here. Then the third tax is this net investment income tax that's around 2%, 2.9%. Oh, I apologize. I don't have the number in front of me. But it's this 2 to 3% tax on net investment income, but it doesn't apply, again, to real estate professionals. So, again, real estate being, as Jason, you and I have talked about over the years, the incredible industry and lobby that's been there for us to give us special tax treatment when we plan and when we strategize. And I applaud those listening today that normally may not listen to a tax discussion, but it can save you thousands of dollars.
Well, income property is the most historically proven asset class, and it's the most tax-favored asset in America. So absolutely right. So just continue. I mean, we went off on the little tangent, Mark, of the Obamacare thing, which, you know, I'm always on these political rants that people love and hate me for. If they hate me, they're clueless. Okay, so sorry. Now they'll hate me even more.
Well, and you know, and even in my new book, I have a whole chapter dedicated to healthcare strategies that where you don't pay Obamacare. And Jason, I've said this before, my clients rarely pay for Obamacare ever. In fact, I'm creating tax deductions for you in the process. So we ought to dedicate a show just to that. So fun. Great topic. Yeah.
Interesting topic. Okay. Okay. But go ahead with what you were saying
before. Okay. So ordinary income. So everybody zoom in on this. If you're generating ordinary income, and here's the technical point for some of you savvy investors out there. The Supreme Court in many, many cases have determined that if you do more than three fix and flips a year, even if you have a job somewhere else, the IRS will now consider you part-time doing another business, and now you're a real estate professional for that type of income. So that's a technical point that if you do too many flips, you actually are going to have ordinary income on top of your wages, which may be in another job. So a little technical side note for you experienced investors. But for everyone else, if you're generating commissions or ordinary income in real estate, the solution is the S corporation, as in small. It's a wonderful way to channel your income through there, take a minimal salary, and push everything else out as net income, which is not subject to C corp tax, self-employment tax, and Jason, the beauty is you can have $1 million of S corp net income, and it's not subject to Obamacare either. The S corp is the perfect solution.
Wow, that's interesting, Mark, because most real estate investors, they're using LLCs, but you're saying use an S corp for who exactly? For flippers?
Yes. And this is where I see a lot of clients use the brother-sister combination. The LLC is on the right-hand side holding your rentals, but on the left side is your S-Corp doing your fix and flips, your commissions, your internet sales, your services, your products. And many of you listening to the show today have multiple sources of income. And if you have ordinary income, let's funnel them all into one S-Corp, one central entity where you can clean that money, scrape away the self-employment tax and the C-Corp tax, and just funnel it through that S-Corp. It's a brother-sister combo.
Very interesting. Okay, so have the S-Corp own the business that's in the business of flipping properties, but if you're going to buy and hold real estate, am I correct in saying you would either want to just own that individually or you'd want to own that inside of an LLC?
Right, which will bring us to our second tip in the legal asset protection arena. But we, from a tax standpoint, remember, folks, LLCs do not save taxes. Now, I know there's someone out there freaking out, and let me say this right now. If you have an LLC taxed as an S-Corp, it's an S-Corp. Don't kid yourself. Yeah, for state purposes, you have the acronym LLC at the end of your company name. But in the eyes of the IRS, you've got your S-Corp filing. You need to do your quarterly payroll, pay yourself a minimal payroll, and everything pushes out the bottom through net income. I love this topic because it brings up a lot of extra questions that I'll just hit quickly for some of you that are taking notes. A lot of folks ask, well, what should my salary be? For those out there that are seasoned and already have an S-Corp, I was just in a CE course yesterday with one of the leaders in the nation on S-Corp planning. I've written about it for years. I consider myself a national expert too on this topic. I've interviewed IRS agents on my show, and here's the trick. And Jason, it's taking the country by storm. It's the Kohler payroll matrix. And so with a little matrix and a diagram.
You've even got a cool name for this. Okay, go for it.
Isn't that cool? It is way cool. So what I do is we start out with some percentages as a starting point. So when a client comes in and says, my net income is in this range, where should my salary generally be? And then where can we get more aggressive? So here's some basic numbers, just quickly. If I'm netting about 100 grand in my business, maybe I'm a realtor, a contractor, a developer, a salesman, whatever the case may be, including my fix and flip ordinary income, let's funnel it all into one S Corp. If I'm netting around 100 grand, my payroll should maybe be around 36, about 33%. But the more money you make net income wise, your payroll as a percentage of your net actually goes down. So if I'm making 200 grand, I may put your payroll at 64 or 70, which might be more in a 25 to 30% allocation. So the more money you make, the more you save. So powerful.
So are we on tip number two or three now?
Let's do it. Tip number two. So asset protection side. So forget the left side. Let's leave the S-Corp strategy alone, which opens the door to cell phone, travel, dining, entertainment, your new Apple Watch, whatever it is. We're going to write it off on the S-Corp side. But on the investment side, this is where the LLC becomes a critical strategy. And just literally this week, we had a client call up that went to one of these fly-by-night companies that's just so frustrating. I'm sure that this client never went to a Jason Hartman event because they wouldn't have been sold this garbage. But they went to an event where the presenter was saying, you need an LLC for every rental. And oh my gosh, talk about taking advantage of the students in the room because all they wanted to sell were these LLCs. And so what I've said, and of course, the flip side is, Jason, you've seen it before, people that will put 30 properties in one LLC. And that's the other extreme. We want to find a balance. And it comes down to this, it's quality, not quantity. You may put four or five properties in one LLC, but if you've got a good property, let's put it in its own LLC.
You've had a metric before, Mark, where you say, you know, about $250,000 worth of, you know, whatever it is.
Equity, yeah.
Well, I didn't want to say equity, and I chose my word carefully because, you know, if it's in an IRA, it might be cash, it might be some other asset.
True.
But about... you know, I mean, of course, it depends on one's level of wealth, right? But, you know, if you've got a net worth of $1 million, just for example, hopefully you have, you know, a net worth of $5 million or even more. But if you've got a net worth of, say, $1 million, divide that up into four LLCs, right? So you have no more than 250 grand in valuation, you know, or market cap, to use a Wall Street term, in each LLC, right? Why 250? What's that all about?
Well, I think that's a great starting point again. Some of you out there may have properties that are worth $1 million and it's one property. So, of course, it goes in its own LLC. So, again, we have to look at areas of the country, the type of real estate. Is it high risk? Is it low risk? And again, the value, like that $250,000 in LLC is a great starting point. I think that's a great starting point because you're going to have your regular insurance, probably an umbrella policy, folks. It's a balance between insurance and entities. We don't want to discount insurance altogether, and we don't want to discount entities altogether. I know the California listeners out there are thinking, oh my gosh, $800 in LLC, I'm just going to buy insurance. Well, do we really want to put all of our eggs in that basket? So I put $250,000 on the table as a starting point because most litigators aren't going to desire or take the time and have the desire to go after an LLC with that much equity because in their minds, there's a lot of cost to get at it. And so it's a great way to dissuade the lawsuit or create a settlement.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I would say 200. If you've got 250,000 in assets, that's worth a lawsuit, right?
It may. But again, they've got to get through insurance. They have to. I've got clients right now that are in 100 grand into a lawsuit, and it can be worth it, sometimes not. And again, it's a starting point, folks. It's a starting point, but. I think the takeaway strategy here I want to just emphasize is two things. One, don't feel like you have to set up an LLC for every rental and property out there. And on the extreme, don't think you can get away putting 10 properties in one LLC either. Find a balance that fits your situation, people. And then number two, make sure your LLC is registered to do business in the state where your rental is located.
That's where this gets so complicated.
It can be. And I'll say this just from a basic perspective is one LLC to start with in your state where you have your primary rental, and then maybe register it in a foreign state for some additional rentals as you expand. But we don't want to try to take one LLC and register it in 10 states, it can get a little overwhelming again. So we want to find a balance.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. So go on with that tip, if you would.
Yeah. And the last, and before we move to tip three, is a classic example of going to the other extreme is I'll set up an entity in Nevada and then just put all my rentals in it no matter what state they're at. But folks, you're not getting protection there. If you have Alabama properties with a Nevada LLC and you don't register your LLC in Alabama, then you have no protection.
Do you have to register in every state, or are there some states that don't care if you register in their state?
I love it. Throw me a softball. No, you the states do care, because you've got to go to court and defend yourself. And if you're not registered as a foreign LLC in that state, you become personally liable. And I, you know, this is where I've liked, Jason, your strategy. Many times you've shared with clients is to not get spread too thin around the country. Find several areas you want to invest and hyper-focus in those areas. Get to know your property managers. Get to know those areas.
Yeah, you don't want to be too thin. You know, I say 3 to 5 markets. One of the mistakes that I made that I freely admit is I over-diversified. I used to just buy in every market. I no longer do that. I wanted to buy wherever our clients were buying, you know, and participate in that. But you definitely... you want to be diversified in at least 3 cities, but not more than 5. So if you're buying, you know, 10 properties, then have, well, it would be 9 in this case, but have 3 1/3. How's that? you'll have to pick one market with 4 and the other 2 with 3. You know, if you're buying 100 properties, have 33 1/3 in each of 3 markets, or maybe 20 of each in 5 markets, okay?
Yeah, and frankly, from a legal standpoint, to keep... again, the administrative costs low and maximize your protection. If we're back to that example of 9 to 10 properties, you're looking at 3 locations or 3 regions of the country, and then 3 LLCs, one for Atlanta, you know, Georgia, one for Ohio, and one for Arizona. I don't, you know, but again, you want to, I'll say this bluntly, folks, as you're approaching your real estate portfolio, don't forget about the legal and tax planning that will inevitably come. Don't let dollar signs start rolling through your eyeballs there, and then you forget a year later, oh my gosh, I haven't considered my legal and tax planning. Think about it as you invest. Be cautious.
Okay, what's the next one?
Third tip. Let's bring it together with the third leg of the stool. I know there's many, many listeners out there today that own their LLCs individually. They own their own home individually. They have maybe even some raw land. It could be a farm or a raw lot somewhere that you hope to develop someday. Your life insurance, everything's going to you individually. Folks, I hate to break this to you. Memorial Day was just a month ago here, is that you're not going to live forever. You've got to think about your overall estate plan and how this is coordinated. If you're going to work so hard to build this wealth, who are you going to leave it to? Is it a spouse or children or charity? We've got to think about the estate planning.
Yeah. Okay. So what about it?
Yeah. So on that tip, I think the overwhelming majority of Americans, and it's a affordable, practical strategy, is to have the revocable living trust. The revocable living trust is part of a well-designed estate plan that's going to include wills, powers of attorney, pull the plug if I'm a vegetable, powers of attorney for healthcare and finances, and all those little pieces and parts. You may readdress it every 5 to 10 years. And for those out there that are single, this builds the foundation for a future marriage. For those that are on a second marriage with his, hers, and our children, it's absolutely critical to make sure that these assets, if you're listening to the Jason Hartman Show and you're building wealth, you've got to have an exit strategy and for your life, really. Where are you going to send these assets so that your family can build, you know, step on your shoulders and take it to the next level? So the revocable living trust is that great foundation.
Okay, so tell us a little bit more about that trust.
You bet. A couple pros and cons. The trust is easy to amend. All of you out there would be your own trustee. It can divide up assets in a variety of ways and can be modified if your children take a turn for the worse or you go through a remarriage or something like that. It can be easily modified. However, a revocable living trust does not provide asset protection. It's not there to protect you in a lawsuit. It's there to protect your assets from probate and a family feud. and which can be even more expensive than a lawsuit. In fact, a family feud probably would be a lawsuit. So having that estate plan is the safety net. And so practically speaking, the trust owns your LLCs. The trust owns your S corp. The trust owns your home, is the beneficiary of your life insurance, so that everything goes into one bucket and is distributed according to your wishes.
And so how do you set it up? What state do you put it in? And why is the trust such a great vehicle?
Well, the trust, first, let's talk about how you can, many of you out there that are do-it-yourselfers, you can start out trying to, you know, go to the web, get some software and build a trust. Just remember it's part of an overall plan. It should mention your will, or your will should mention your trust, vice versa. And there's going to be those extra documents such as donating organs and the healthcare directives and powers of attorney. So it's part of an overall plan, and there is software out there to do those sorts of things. With using an attorney, it should be better tailored to your situation, and a lot of discussion involved. And prices are going to range between $500 to $1,500 to $2,000 max. If someone's going to charge you more than a couple thousand dollars to do a comprehensive and creative estate plan, you still are probably paying too much. So the pricing can be very affordable when you don't need to redo it every 5 or 10 years even. And then I guess bringing it together is that once you get it set up, it's easy to maintain and amendments can be affordable. And so state by state, if you move, in fact, it goes with you. So Jason, you normally set it up in the state where you live, where you're located, and the only document, Jason, we could maybe tell us, maybe wrap up with a funny story today on the show, tragic but funny, is that only when you move to another state, the only document that would need to be updated is your healthcare directive, meaning if I am a vegetable, if I get in that accident and I'm in a coma, I don't want to be on life support if my, you know, if there's no brain activity. And that type of document does need to be updated from state to state. But your will and trust will go with you wherever you live.
Okay, so that moves with you, so that's great. Okay, what's the funny story? You're a great, funny, and entertaining speaker, so I bet this is going to be pretty good.
Well, you know, and on this topic of death, I know that there's obviously someone listening today that's probably had a loved one pass away recently, so please know that I don't mean to offend. So this is my disclaimer right off the bat is that, but I try to keep this topic light. We all need to deal with it, and we need to take ourselves with a little bit of humor and know that we are all mortal. So anyway, there was this client of mine, and she was the nurse working on this. This is firsthand. So this woman, she lived out back east, and she had a diagnosis of cancer, and she'd done all she could, but it was pretty much her time to go, and she had about 3 months to live. And so she moved out to California and the state of red tape, if you will. So she gets out to California, and this will play out. She was staying with her daughter in her last few months. And of course, one day her daughter comes into the kitchen. Her mom's collapsed on the floor, and she called 911, and the paramedics show up, and the daughter had the mom's do not resuscitate, the DNR. And she holds it up. Well, it's from Connecticut. So, of course, we're in the state of red tape. So, of course, the paramedics say, we can't honor that. It's got to be California paperwork. So they pull out the paddles and, you know, get her, you know, paddled up and resuscitated and bring her back to life. And on the way to the hospital, she was so mad. She was swearing at she got to the hospital, and this is where my client was at. And she was this lady was just irate. She was, I saw the light. I was ready to go. And you brought me back. What are you doing? I had my paperwork all done. Well, you're in California, ma'am. And she was so mad that night.
This is already good.
Yeah. So that night in the hospital, she goes, if you can't deal with a piece of paper, I'm going to show you. So she called in a tattoo artist. And this is true. Gosh, awful truth here. She brought in a tattoo artist, and on her chest, she had the words tattooed, do not resuscitate, right on her chest. And she goes, I'm going to show them. So sure enough, within about 48 hours, she, red line, beep, and they came running in, and they're ready to save her life, and they prepare and, of course, open her shirt, and there she is, right on her chest, do not resuscitate. And so you'd think that was the moral story. She passed away, family mourned her loss, but it was all planned, you know, at that point. But the I thought an important consideration is here how she got it notarized. So I want to let you know, we're office here is in California. So ladies, if you want to go to that extent, I am a notary, so we'll come out and take care of that if you need it.
She got her tattoo notarized.
Yeah. I'll bring out the tattoo artist and we'll take care of the notary right there.
Oh, that's funny. Gosh. Oh, what a morbid and funny story at the same time.
I know, yeah. But you know.
Okay, good. Mark, give out your website. Tell people where they can find you.
Well, you bet. And thanks for my weak attempt. I'm a CPA, folks, and we're pretty much dry, boring individuals. So any attempt I give...
You're the most humorous CPA and attorney I've met.
You're so kind. Well, my website is www.markjkohler.com. Mark, J as in Jolly, Kohler, K-O-H-L-E-R.com. And there's links to our law firm, our accounting firm. We help clients all over the country. And on my website, you can get my new book, sign up for a little 15-minute interview or our newsletter every week that's free. And we'd love to work with you. So, Jason, thanks so much for having me out. You're so awesome. I love your show and everything you do.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much, Mark. And likewise, right back to you. And we'll have you on the show again soon. And maybe one of your other attorneys, Matt, on the show as well. So we look forward to hearing more from you and keeping in touch. Thanks again.
Thank you.
You know, sometimes I think of Jason Hartman as a walking encyclopedia on the subject of creating wealth.
Well, you're probably not far off from the truth, Penny, because Jason actually has a 3-book set on creating wealth that comes with 60 digital download audios.
Yes, Jason has that unique ability to make you understand investing the way it should be. It's a world where anything less than 26% annual return is disappointing.
I love how he actually shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I also like how he teaches you to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
And the entire set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered at a savings of $94.
That's right. And to get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series, complete with over 60 hours of audio and 3 books, just go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month, just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.